Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net.
Christopher Media, let's make some noise. Welcome to Beer Nuts, a weekly excursion into the world of craft beer, brought to you by MichiganBeerGuide.com. And now, here are the Beer Nuts.
It's number 120. Chris, I'm in Detroit, Michigan. My last check-in on Untapped was from Fox Brewing Company in West Des Moines, Iowa. Arctic Breakfast.
Nice. JR here on Gros Eel, Michigan, right on the Canadian border. My last Untappd check-in was last night. I had a nightcap called Insanity, an English barley wine from Weyerbacher Brewing Company.
Uncle Pete here from Rockwood, Michigan. And my last Untappd was yesterday evening. Greenbush Mr. Hyde, sweet milk stout brewed with coffee. And even though I drank it later in the evening, I still slept like a baby.
All right. It's Doug out here. I'm in Clawson, Michigan. And my last Untappd check-in was Broody McBrutface, which is my own home brewed brute IPA. And came out quite good, actually. Really, really good.
This is Lieutenant Dang in Springfield, Missouri. My last check-in was a barrel-aged Old Rasputin, the wheat whiskey version from, it is their Old Rasputin 19. Sorry, I gotta do my, I'm not good with my Roman numerals that they use. It was good. It was good. Not as good as I remember originally, but that was some years ago.
Yeah, those Roman numerals can get you. The only ones I know are LII for 52 for the Super Bowl 52 Philadelphia Eagles champions. But
oh, gosh.
Well, and 1, 2, 3 should be pretty easy, I would think.
Yeah. Not if you went to where I went to high school.
Yeah. This is XVIIII. So.
Oh, dear.
Sounds like 18, I believe.
No, there's four of them, four eyes.
Well, that should be XVIV.
Who's right. This?
It is 18. It's just three. I'm a little cross-eyed, but I swear I haven't been drinking.
Well, get on it.
All right.
All right, everybody. Chris, you want to kick us off here?
Well, this week, I mean, what brew are we doing? We are doing Stone Brewing from, I believe, Northern California. Am I correct, gentlemen? In the right part of California?
Southern California.
Okay. Party foul already.
Between San Diego and L.A. Escondido.
Escondido, yep.
And I believe there's a second Stone location. Is it in that in Richmond, Virginia?
There is. And then there's a international location in, I believe, in Berlin.
Ah, that's in right. Deutschland. Das Motherland.
And then there's also one in San Diego.
And they're opening in Shanghai, I thought, as well, or somewhere like that.
Yeah, I believe.
Wow.
Oh, is well, all right. I'm brewer. Getting... They have a lot of one-off batches there. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this episode, but that you'll definitely want to tune into the one to follow.
Now, are these guys independent? They seem to have an awful lot of distribution.
Listen to this, man. I see independent craft brewer on, icon on the label, so they are definitely
I see them everywhere, so this is all just, they've done this all on their own, nobody's helping them out, it's pretty impressive, because you see them everywhere. I don't think I've been to a state yet where you can't find a Stone.
Yeah, and
I think Diego, other than
costs like $20 million to build that new spot, so yeah, they must be doing well.
I think other than doing some crowdfunding or something early on, I think they've done pretty well on their own.
All right, well, let's start drinking some beers, guys. I'm thirsty, so I'm going to kick off the show with a game-changing beer that I discovered while I was working for a large importer that generally people know that comes in a lager in a green bottle from Holland. That's about all I have to say about that. But I am opening up a can of the what I call the OG, one of my OG favorites, Stone IPA, the iconic West Coast style IPA. This is just the traditional good old Stone IPA. And there's a story behind this, why I was so excited to make sure I tried just, the old iconic, the good old standby that this was the first hoppy IPA craft beer that I really discovered and grew to love when I lived in Las Vegas and I was working for, imported beer company that I, failed to divulge earlier, but when I was a rep in Las Vegas, I was very loyal to my employer, of course, which nothing to be ashamed of. Had a great portfolio of imported beers, but this beer, I can remember one time going to a bar off the beaten path where nobody knew I was the rep for anybody, and I just went in and I was going to play a little video poker, and they had a nice long tap list of about 30 taps, and I saw the Stone IPA, and I'm like, you know what? I've never tried that. I'm going to try it. So I tried my first Stone IPA, and it was life-changing. It was so flavorful, so pungent, so hoppy, like a hop punch in the mouth. And when we decided we were doing this episode, I always remembered that whenever I wanted to kind of escape from the grind of the everyday, calling on my accounts and drinking the same old beers that I repped, this was kind of an escape for me, where I could go out and kind of be incognito and sit in the corner and not think about business and just enjoy a really good tasting beer that I didn't often get to do. So I just cracked open a can. Ironically, this only came in bottles when I first discovered the brand, but like a lot of breweries, we've discovered that a can is a great vessel to protect the quality of beer and freshness. So without further ado, I just poured this, and it's got that familiar hoppy smell to it. After having so many New England hazy IPAs over the last several months, it's nice to have an OG West Coast style, that nice piney citrus aroma. I still got a really healthy, half a finger white foamy head. That was probably about a finger and a half when I first poured it, but it's lingering longer. And I even have this in one of my favorite beer glasses. It's a Stone Ruin 10 IPA, which was their 10th anniversary beer that I coveted. So I'm going to take a sip of this. It's got that nice, it's pretty clear, see-through, nice clear, not quite copper, like a lighter, like an orange, maybe a very slight, like tan orange color. Again, nice pine and citrus aroma. I can smell the hops, so let's take a sip. Yep, you got a little bit of little citrus right off the bat. You can taste that nice hop bitterness on the finish. I get citrus, I get a little pine, and then it finishes with the piney hop bitterness. And it's just, I just still can remember this like that first one I tasted. I can remember sitting at the bar, putting my money into that poker machine and taking that first sip and saying, wow, this is like amazing. Most of the beers that I handled didn't have near the hop level of this. And it was just a nice diversion. I can like them all, right? But so that's my story about this little off-the-wall place. I never did tell them who I worked for or what I did. It was just my little escape from reality place. It was a little bit out of town from in the Henderson toward Lake Mead, a little account that I called on out there that I just never really regarded as, it was my little hideaway. So really enjoy pretty much all of Stone's IPAs. That's what put them on the map. But, as I grew to discover later on after moving to Michigan and some of the other great beers they had, they make some great stouts. one of my favorite barley wines, Old Guardian, which we'll be tasting later, and just a nice, complete portfolio of beers. But I think the first, my first memory of Stone, anyway, is those nice West Coast hoppy, piney IPAs that they're known for. And this may be, I guess, a standard run of the mill, one of their, you know, their flagships, but it's still delicious to this day. And I salute you, Stone. Come a long way since that first beer I had, and now you're a global brand. So cheers, everyone. If you see this, pick it up. It's I think they have four-pack cans, maybe six-pack cans. I'm not sure. I'm having a 16-ounce can right now, and it's delicious and still highly regarded in the hierarchy of my West Coast IPAs.
If you're looking to try a West Coast IPA, if you want a good baseline for the style, I think this is the one, in my humble opinion. Like, if you're looking to get into West Coast IPAs, start here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Christopher. It's they're the epitome of what the style is about, but they're not a one-trick pony. So, and we'll get into that in a little bit further down in the show, but as far as, you know, your intro to Stone should definitely be one of their IPAs, one of many. They do have many, and they do have quite a few that kind of cycle in and out as well.
Well, I'd just like to read a little bit about the beer before we move on to the next beer. It's 6.9% alcohol, 71 IBUs. Little write-up on it. By definition, an India Pale Ale is hoppier and higher in alcohol than its little brother Pale Ale, and we deliver in spades. One of the most well-respected and best-selling IPAs in the country, this golden beauty explodes with tropical, citrusy, piney hop flavors and aromas, all perfectly balanced by a subtle malt character. This crisp, extra hoppy brew is hugely refreshing on a hot day, but will always deliver no matter when you choose to drink it. Hit the nail on the head right there. Great, great description. Pete, what are your thoughts? You got to taste some too.
Yeah, it's got a canning date actually of, I think, late August, but to me, this is fresh. It's hoppy. I can close my eyes and just taste West Coast IPA all the way. I love it. It just dried my mouth right out. And the bitterness is long lingering. And the aroma was fantastic. So, bright white head. It's enjoyable. Very good standard.
Yep, another. My other one I mentioned, the Ruin 10, used to come out in Palmer's every summer. I know that through the years, the portfolio has evolved. I'm not sure if that's still something that they make, or if maybe they've changed the recipe, but that was an old favorite. And then one I have to mention is later after I had moved here, I flew back to Vegas, and my old favorite craft beer bar that I used to live right around the corner from, that did know who I worked for, there's a bar called Aces and Ales in East Las Vegas. And when I flew back, they had a party to introduce Collective Distortion, which was a nice Stone IPA that had to do with, I guess, the drummer from Alice Cooper. I think Carrie's his name. Long story short, they had a rollout launch party at Aces and Ales the night I arrived, and I literally landed. My friend picked me up, took me to his house, and drove me right to Aces and Ales. And I had called ahead to make sure that they actually had a promotion, and they, I guess for one price, you got to get a T-shirt, a pint glass, and a draft of Collective Distortion. And I still have the T-shirt and the glass, and I rolled in there, and they remembered who I was, and it was a really good homecoming to be welcomed in with a great beer and all the swag that came with it. So another great Stone memory for me. It's great, great distributor out there in Vegas, Bonanza Beverage. Was a competitor of mine, was in the business, but developed a lot of respect for them and their staff. And I've had nothing but a positive experience with Stone Brewing. So I'll step off my soapbox and let somebody else. I think we're heading to Doug next.
All right. I'm going to step up the ABV a little bit with this beer. What I have is from the Enjoy By series, and I'll get into that in a second. But this is in Stone Enjoy By, 1/1/19. So this is meant to be drank before New Year's. It's a brewed IPA. We've been talking about those a lot recently. And I'll get back to the series here, though, first. It's Stone and Joy By. It is a series of double IPAs. They usually range anywhere from 8 to 9%. And always a double IPA, always a little different take, and always an enjoy by date. You know, they're a little pricey for like a six pack of cans. I think this one was right around the $17 range, but man, always well worth it. This particular one is, as I said, a brute IPA, and just it comes in at a hefty 9.4. And then it also comes in at a super hefty for the brewed IPA at 90 IBUs. So, you know, it's a newer style and it's not well defined yet. So leave it to Stone to like push the envelope, push the boundaries on the IBUs. Just read a little bit of what it says. What better way to commemorate a fresh start than an uber fresh beer? This variant of our Enjoy by IPA series features innovative brewing techniques. They give you bright effervescence and a super dry finish. It makes for a great craft beer alternative to traditional bubbles, and it's still blasted with enough explosive hop flavor to rival any fireworks display. Enjoy its refreshing notes of citrus and peach before, during, and after the holidays, just not too long after. So, yeah, they got it. I mean, that holiday ends at 1-1, right?
That's true.
Well, this beer is brewed not to last. Here's hoping your resolutions are the opposite. So, release date, November 27th, 2018. So, yeah, we are really fresh on this. And comes in six-pack cans, 22-ounce bottles, and good luck finding it on draft, but if you do, drink it. Flavor profile, hoppy, tropical, floral. When to enjoy is 37 days. Score on Beer Advocate is a 98, which is still pretty new. There's enough time for the curmudgeons to start chipping away at that score. If anybody that's kind of a follower of Beer Advocate knows what I mean. I mean, you could have the best beer in the world and somebody will find something to gripe about it. So featured hops, this is where it gets interesting, I think, is Nugget, Super Galena, Simcoe, Delta, Target, Amarillo, Cascade, Galaxy, Citra, Nelson Sauvin, Matuka, and Helga. It's so like a few all, names that...
All the hops. That
everything. Whatever we had laying around in the room got used. I just did a batch of beer like that, a Belgo Red or a Belgo Brown, depends how it turns out. And yeah, that got that same hop treatment. You know, probably 10 different hops in that thing. We'll see what happens. But... So a little bit about the style, too, and just kind of back up. This beer came out of California. It uses a process of there's an enzyme that converts the sugars differently that allow the yeast to convert everything in the batch of beer, meaning like you get as dry of a beer as possible. And that means there is zero residual sugar left in there. It's typically on the hazy front, and it's also typically, at least some of the styles I've had, juicy. But again, it's a new style. So Stone's taking it in a different direction. Stone's saying, yeah, we'll give it those components, but we're still going to bring out the hops, and we're going to go high IBUs on this. So very different take. Most of the ones I've seen have had some haze to them. They've been really light gold in color, just bright yellow almost. This one is more on the gold side. It has beautiful lacing and a nice head, and it is crystal clear. You see right through it. So just some differences from some of the few other ones I've tried. I think this is... overall, it's a phenomenal beer. I mean, it just has a lot of fruit, and I mean, the nose is kind of piney and fruity. It's definitely has the bitterness that you're looking for in an IPA, but it dissipates really fast because the beer is so dry. And none of these hops really stand out. I know that some of them are on the fruitier side of things. Some of them are a little on the pinier. So it seems to just give it that sort of, you know, it's a West Coast beer flair. I mean, super bitter up front, but yeah, it just tails off. It doesn't hang on. The body is sort of a medium to light for a 9% beer. It's just really drinking well.
Yeah, I'm getting into these brutes now myself. Every chance I get when I'm standing around and staring at the beers in the aisle, if I can buy singles, I'm buying singles. So I have a handful at home now that I'm working my way through. It's fun to get into the new, you know, experimental stuff.
Well, sure, and it's a lot more available, and it doesn't seem to be as snooty and coveted as a lot of the East Coast IPAs were and still are. That it's being produced in a readily available way, and maybe some of the guys that latched on to the New England styles haven't let go of it yet, haven't embraced it yet as a true style. I'm not sure which it is. I mean, I'm happy to bounce from style to style to style, always, and I always will be. So I never get stuck on one thing, and that's, I don't have, you know, this is my definitive IPA, because, yeah, it's revolving, and it's evolving, and it's constantly changing. So happy to, like, try to not have to run around and chase down New England beers because I'm really over that at this point. But you know what? Give me a nice brewed IPA that I can go buy at my store, and I'm a happy camper, you know?
Right on.
Well, it seems like this is a thing, and I haven't tried a brewed IPA yet, but it sounds like it's time.
Well, we get there. I think we've got an episode of it coming up, so
I'll have no choice. I'll have to find
one. You won't have a choice. You better start looking, my man.
I think you'll enjoy them. I think you'll enjoy them, Chris. I really do. They're straightforward. They're not overly complex. You know, they're not hugely malty. It's just a nice dry beer that accentuates the aroma and the flavor of the hops. In my opinion.
You're absolutely right, Uncle Pete. I mean, it is brewed to really just not taste the malt at all. It's typically a hop feature. The one I brewed was heavily Mosaic, so you get that sort of juiciness, but there's also, you know, just a crisp finish to it. Great for summer, but when you get a big, big, huge one like this Enjoy By, perfectly acceptable having the colder weather.
Cool. I'll look for that one. Thanks for sharing.
Well, brute means dry, and that will be our last episode of this year that we'll have right around New Year's Eve. So look for more brute IPAs coming soon.
I see what we're doing there.
Well, yes. I'm not going to be dry on New Year's Eve. I don't know about the rest of you.
No, it's the new champagne of beers. So if we're right around New Year's Eve, you get the gist.
Yes. So who is next? I believe
Uncle Pete's next.
There we go.
Sweet. Okay. I was browsing this store in Detroit the other day with JR, and we were looking for some stone beers, and I come across one that I've never seen before, and it's got 3 backslashes and the words fear.movie.lions. And it's got a beautiful picture on the can of the stone gargoyle. And this is an unfiltered double IPA. And I believe it's, going to be their take on a New England style, just because it's going to be on the hazy side and probably, loaded up with hops. Can says it's an 8.5% ABV. And I think on their website it said 60 IBUs. So it's a white and silver can, pint can. It's hard to read the silver words on the white background, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. But I want to dig right into this one. And then we'll talk a little bit about the name of the beer, which I've got some background on what this fear.movie.lions means. So I'm going to pour this up. and it's quite carbonated. JR, I'll let you have some while mine settles down. And boy, this has got a nice, very light yellow color, bright white head, very active head, nicely carbonated. An aroma of really nice fruit, just like a nice New England hazy would be. Really fresh smelling, maybe a little pineapple in there and some of the tropical fruits. Want to give it a taste. It's got a nice haze to it. It says it's unfiltered, but I'll tell you, I mean, to me, this would almost be like a typical chill haze. It's not like a murky, murky, cloudy beer. Take a nice swig of that. Oh, boy. Wow. I mean, comparatively speaking, this, the fruit juiciness hits you right up front. Let me take another swig. Wow. I mean, that's it's got a sweetness to this fruit, very sugary, almost maybe like berries. It's got a nice bitterness, though, as it transforms from the sweet fruity flavor and it goes into a nice bitterness. This is really, really good. And I would say it's not harsh in any way. It's very smooth. Man, I'm very pleased with this selection. I'd certainly seek this one out again. Overall, I'd say it's a winner. JR, you want to chime in a couple of thoughts? Have you had a swig?
Oh, sure have. Man, it's delicious. So first thing I noticed is an unbelievable aroma on this thing. Really, you can smell the fruit. I get some, you know, pineapple hops. You can tell it's a sweeter and more fruity than, you know, the drier version of the regular IPA we had earlier. And then you taste it. It doesn't look like a New England or anything. It's like Pete described it perfectly, more like the chill haze, but it is slightly hazy. But man, it's nice and juicy. You got lots of fruit, you know, pineapple, maybe some grapes or berries in here. Really nice and fruity, and then it finishes with a nice hop finish. Not too bitter, but the hops take over at the end. So I actually looked this up, and there's a big long description of why it's named that. I'm going to leave that to read on the can. But what I would like to say is I found some tasting notes, and I'm pulling these up now because I hadn't read these prior to Pete and I reviewing, and I think we hit it pretty good, Pete. It says, appearance opaque, murky gold with a fluffy white head. Aroma, a medley of fresh fruit with juicy fresh hops and a hint of pineapple. Taste, fresh squeezed fruit juice, strawberry, blueberry, grapes, and a hint of white sage. Palate, juicy and leading to a short, moderately bitter finish. Overall, this is our tip on a hazy East Coast double IPA. Juicy and smooth with just the right touch of West Coast bitterness in the finish. The aroma on this beer is insane and reminds us of getting fresh fruit from a farm stand on the side of the road. Now make that a farm stand on the side of the road in Yakima, Washington during hop harvest. The aroma of fresh hops envelops. So that's a great, some great descriptions there and right in line with what I'm tasting. I think the one thing I'd like to say is for a double IPA, it doesn't taste very strong. I think right. This one could really sneak up on you. I don't know what the ABV on. I'll turn it over to Pete. He'll tell you more about the name and a little bit more about the beer. But it's a wonderful, good thing that we discovered this one the other day, and really glad that you're reviewing it.
It's not an over-the-top ABV. It's an 8.5%er. So, yeah, it's hidden in there well because the flavors and the aroma just kind of take over, and there's nothing unpleasant about that at all. I did stop at a fruit stand on the side of the road in Yakima, Washington this summer.
Nice.
And I don't know if this is what it smelled like there, I did enjoy the visit, and I ended up buying some cider and a big bag of fresh apples that were right out of the orchards there. Awesome. And off in the distance, I could see some hop fields. And I think on a previous episode, I talked about one of the beer breweries I stopped at in Yakima that had it was plopped right in the middle of a hop farm, so it was surrounded completely by hops. Nonetheless, back to the Stone Fear Movie Lions. And thanks again, JR, for sharing your comments as well. I think, man, we've been drinking so many beers together for so long now. I think we're we're turning into a clone of each other when we talk about beers. But this thing had me wondering when I first bought it. I go, Fear Movie Lions, what the heck is that? And it's actually fear.movie.lions. And I found out through some research at the website, there is an online site, and there's also an app called What Three Words. And that's what and the number three and words. If you go to whatthreewords.com, it turns out that apparently the whole world is, per this app, has been divided into a grid of 3 meter by 3 meter squares. And each square has a unique three-word address. And this unique three words, fear.movie.lions, happens to be an address of a 3 meter by 3 meter square smack dab in the middle of their Richmond, Virginia stone brewing complex. And when you plug in the search bar at whatthreewords.com on the map, if you plug in fear.movie.lions, you will zoom right in on a satellite image into the roof of the brewery in Richmond, Virginia. So it's a cool, you know, it's like Google Earth, Google Maps, all that kind of stuff. And it's just another way to address. And I think what they're envisioning, you know, with this app, and I was reading a little about it, is that if they've got this ability to address everything down to that small of a resolution, ultimately you can do all sorts of neat stuff with it besides helping locate each other. Like JR could pin himself with three words wherever he's at, and he could tell me the three words, and I could go on the app and see where he's at. Or say I was going to drone deliver you a six pack of Stone Fear Movie Lions. Give me your what three words location, and I'll program that into the drone, and the drone will meet you there. So cool stuff, high tech. Love to think about that kind of jazz when we're drinking beers. It's all thinking outside the box, and I love it. So good job, Stone. This is kind of fun learning all this kind of stuff. And never had a beer, I don't think, before from you, from your Richmond facility. I know you opened there in 2016. And probably most of the beers I've had have been from the West Coast. And I just think it's great that you're expanding globally, that you've gotten yourself into Europe and into China. And I think you're in Napa Valley as well. So keep it up. You've been expanding at a breakneck pace ever since you started. And we congratulate you, and we appreciate the great beers. Cheers.
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 And on a completely unrelated topic, tomorrow marijuana becomes legal in Michigan, so everybody gets stoned. Whether it's by drinking a Stone brewery or by listening to one of Chris's other podcasts, The Weedsman.
Hear, hear. And by the way, I thought I'd chime in since we're on little news tidbits for the moment. Today happens to be the 85th anniversary of the repeal of Prohibition. So I'll drink to that.
Amen. Drink to the 21st Amendment. All right, well, that was a great revelation there. I think it's time to head to Missouri and Lieutenant Dang.
Yes, sir. We also in Missouri just passed medical marijuana, so there's that.
Hey, baby steps.
Let's see. I am going to be drinking a baby steps. I'm going to be drinking a Stone Moje IPA. It is East meets West in a haze of juicy hops. It pours with a nice light white head, nice lacing, small bubbles, lingered for a while. It just kind of dissipated here recently. Just poured it a minute ago. The nose is just, it's straight tropical. Really, really orange, leaning towards orange, kind of tropical. It smells great. If you haven't seen a lot of Stone products in your market, they tend a lot of times, not always, they tend to have long stories on their back of the bottle or whatever.
and this one is no exception. I'm not going to read it all, but it is a collaboration with some homebrewers for this bottle. It was their 10th anniversary of the American Homebrewers Association being held at Stone, and that this beer was brewed to commemorate. And it is brewed with a couple of, it's not real clear, I think it's their homebrewers, Corey Majors and Elizabeth Bacchus. Hazy Hop Bomb with more bitterness than a typical New England IPA. Amarillo, Citra, and Mosaic hops elicit a fresh squeezed OJ quality in a combination of pellet hops and cryo hops for more clean flavors and less roughness. Mosaic plus OJ equals Mojay. Forget mimosas. This one is perfect for a lazy Sunday. So let's give it a taste here. It's just like the description says. I mean, it leans really towards that orange flavor. I mean, it's definitely a little hoppy, a little bitter. And then it's really lingering, a nice lingering bitter finish on the end. I didn't describe the look here. It's slightly hazy. I can barely sort of see my fingers through the glass as I hold it up to the light. And it's a nice, light orange, light dark yellow kind of a color. Dark urine. Is that too much for people to hear? I don't know. Sorry.
I think we can come up with better than that one.
Yeah, no, sorry.
Apple juice?
Yeah, apple juice.
No, it's not that dark. But it's kind of got an orange tint to it. But it's delicious. It is fantastic. It's a Bomber 22-ounce bottle, which, to be clear, a Bomber is 22 ounces. A Bomber is not every big bottle, just in case you were wondering. It is delicious. And most of the Stone Bombers are priced really reasonably. I don't remember what I paid for this. I think it was a couple bucks more than kind of their norm, than my market seems to be, like $6.99 or something like that for the Enjoy Buy series that was talked about earlier. But this is a fantastic beer. And if I'm out just looking for another beer to drink and I find this one and nothing else piques my interest, I'll for sure will not shy away from drinking this one again. It is delicious.
Sounds delicious.
Sure does, man. And I'm so glad we did this episode because so many choices out there, and sometimes we forget some of the OG, iconic brands like Stone. And to revisit the brand has really been refreshing. And so far, all the beers that we've either tasted or heard about, sound fantastic. I know that we did an episode earlier this year, old dog, new tricks, where some older breweries can be stodgy and not change with the times, and these guys are always innovating, always keeping up with the times. Perfect example, this double IPA Pete and I tried, nice hazy New England, and the Doug has enjoyed by series. So they're on top of their game, and that's why they're now going worldwide and continuing to succeed. And it's great, one beer at a time, to go back to a great brewery like this and give them their just due. So
well, if you think about it too, with just the IPA style, I mean, it used to be just basically one style. It was IPA, and then it was kind of, well, there's this new kind of West Coast IPA. Now there's New England, and there's Brut, and there's other little kind of niches in between that. But Stone kind of does them all, and to the point that you guys were saying earlier, their IPA is a great example of the West Coast IPA, and it is one that I do not shy away from drinking from time to time. I would say another one is just the Sierra Nevada, either Pale Ale or Torpedo, their IPA, but that a standard you can always kind of come back to over and over again. And the cool thing about what these guys are doing is they're not afraid to change it up, like the Brut IPA, the New England IPA, whatever it is. And it's cool too, like I don't know if we I don't think anybody has a Woot Stout tonight, but, you know, there was another collaboration that they did, and everybody kind of brought something different to this stout that they made. And it's like, well, what did Greg bring from Stone? He brought the hops, you know, because even the stout has hops in it, of course, you know. So, it's just kind of what they're known for, but as a brewery, is their hops and their IPAs, but they make almost every style, and they do so many things so well.
Well, and those are just awesome points, Dan. And it's such a great lead-in to the beer Christopher has. And I don't know if we're ready to switch over yet, but the beer Christopher has was originally a homebrew competition as well.
Oh, nice.
And they also do a homebrew competition, which is the Fusion Series. And the winner of that gets to brew the recipe, and then that beer gets released by Stone nationally. And it's typically a draft only, from what I remember seeing. But, man, when you see a Fusion by Stone on draft in a beer menu, man, you got to grab it. Because those are the beers that are like, those are the ones that matter. Because that says to them, oh, this homebrewer went so far out of the way, did such a killer beer that we need to make this. And then they just change it up every year. It's a different one.
Yeah, well, I guess I will get into my beer. I mean, it's one we've reviewed on the show before, but I think it's been a while. And too, it goes with the theme. It is a Zocco Vesa, and we're switching styles here. We're going from the IPAs to this is a stout. I will read right from the website here because it gives you all the background, and I forget stuff. This is a beloved stout. When we first introduced it as a limited special collaboration release with San Diego homebrewer Chris Banker, after his recipe won our national homebrew competition, Dugout referred to. And here we go. Cerveceria Insurgente, it was an instant hit, and fans began clamoring for its return. Seeing as how its amazing flavor profile is evocative of Mexican hot chocolate, featuring coffee, pasilla peppers, vanilla, cinnamon, nutmeg, and a generous amount of our own in-house homemade chocolate, we concluded it was the perfect stout to re-release in celebration of the holidays and the entire winter season. This is now a highly anticipated yearly tradition that we are pleased to present from us to you, and makes a perfect wintry gift from you to your friends, loved ones, or simply to yourself. Cheers. And I'm not going to lie, I drank ahead, but we're going to review it. I mean, the you pour it, I mean, it's black. It's not on par with Mortar Oil. It's pretty dark. It's almost there. Nice thick brown head on it. You stick your nose in it. You're smelling the cinnamon. You're smelling the nutmeg. You're getting a little bit of the chocolate and the coffee. Oh, man, every time I taste it, there's more and more stuff that comes out. I've just got a nice full-bodied mouthfeel. And, you're tasting the cinnamon. You're getting the nutmeg. You're getting the heat of the peppers. And then that chocolate and that coffee kind of come in right at the end. And, oh, man, I could see why this is definitely released around the holidays. And what's funny, too, is it's got all these pairings listed. It's got appetizer pairings, soup and salad pairings, entree pairings, cheese pairings, dessert pairings, cigar pairings. This is going to be dangerous to have around the house for the holidays. But this is a home run. If you're into stouts, try this. This is a home run. This is, I don't think I've ever used the term delectable before, but this is really good. In typical with a lot of the stouts, yeah, the warmer this gets, I taste something different the more this sits out. This is a home run. I mean, it's been nothing but home runs all night with Stone.
Well, Christopher, I'm so glad that you brought this to the table, because Pete and I actually looked for it tonight and couldn't find any. And I thought I had one in my cellar, but I think I drank the last one a couple of weeks ago. But there's a reason it wasn't here. It's because it's really good and they disappear. Because That's just one of the fantastic beers that comes out in the fall winter season going into the holidays. Perfect holiday beer. You got the cinnamon, the nutmeg, and just a great tasting stout. And of course, those that know me know I like that little pepper kick at the end. So it's always been a favorite of mine, and I really would have been disappointed if it wasn't included in this episode. So really happy that you you brought that to the table tonight.
This is Oco Vesa Beer Nog recipe on Stone's website.
Sweet.
I'm all in on that.
Yeah.
And I'm also disappointed because I saw a bottle of Oco Vesa Charred, which is their bourbon barrel-aged version, and I thought somebody last week said that they were going to review that. I'm like, well, I'd like to buy that, but somebody else has that. But that's okay. I'm still going to go buy one tomorrow.
Yeah, do it. That was me. My bad. I had it in my hand, and I thought that maybe somebody did have the Oco Vesa, so I wanted to, and there was a new bottle that I hadn't tried yet, which we'll let you know in a minute here. That just kind of won it over, the new one over the stuff I'd had before, even though I've not reviewed that beer on the show before. But I think, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves here, but we may review that beer, that Joke of Asia Chard may be coming back as a vintage year. Nice. On our show sometime in the near future.
Well, that being said, I'm still buying one just to drink for the holidays. Even if
Do you see it? Get it. Absolutely. Both versions. Joke of Asia.
I know there's a few left at my local shop, and I know it won't be there long, and if it's there tomorrow, I'm snagging it. And I recommend everybody else here to do it.
The regular Joke of Asia, age is great. Certain flavors fall off in it, so some of the heat and the pepper falls off. But it still makes for a really great, interesting beer. And so if you've got a cellar, you want to pull a bottle or two from a year and put it in there, it changes the character of it a little bit, but makes it a really nice beer, and it sort of mellows it out some too.
I've tried to do that, but it's hard to keep from drinking those. They're so tasty.
Those, yeah, no. I mean, they never make it to the cellar. I mean, they don't have the wax on the top that means you're supposed to save it thing going on.
No, always an enjoyable beer. So, well, speaking of cellarable beers, I'm going to move in. I guess we're going down to round two. There's only two of us that have a second beer. But before that, is there any hipster tipster news anybody wants to share? I'm trying to think anything out there. I think. Bourbon County just released Black Friday. We were going to do a Black Friday show, but I think everybody was just needed to rest their livers a little bit after that Thanksgiving holiday. So we took a week off, but Uncle Pete and I went to the Founder's Tap Room and enjoyed some Panther Cub, which is a porter with some vanilla beans and cocoa nibs, I think, in there.
Yeah.
Very good. We went to the tap room only release that sold out in an hour or two and managed to get some of that. So if any of you other beer nuts didn't have a chance to try that, we'll be glad to share. I think we're going to try to get together for a holiday episode soon, but we'll discuss that after we go off the air. There's a lot of good beers releasing. I know Drafting Table here locally had a release just today on a Wednesday, which was kind of weird, of a palatable Imperial Stout. I couldn't get out there to get it. But a lot of, I guess where I'm going with this is just, this is the time of the year. It's stout season. A lot of big hitters, big in-demand beers being released. And the other good thing is there's a lot of people sharing a lot of good beers with friends, and that's what the holiday season is all about. So anybody else have any industry news? I know there's been a couple smaller breweries closing. I don't really want to go into anything there. Let's just try to keep it positive, but open it up to anybody else if you have anything. If not, I got a big beer here that I'm ready to pop.
Why don't you just give us that big beer, JR?
All right, let's just do it. So I went down to my cellar looking for some Woot Stout, looking for some Imperial Stout. Apparently, I've drank all of that up, which is a testament to the quality of Stone beers. My cellar has been rated of all some of the better Stone stouts, but One beer that I have hoarded over the years because I just really treasure it is their barley wine style ale called Old Guardian. And I actually didn't realize I had hoarded this much, but I have three bombers of 2012 vintage and one bomber of 2013. So I grabbed the 2012 and threw it in the fridge, and Uncle Pete and I are going to, I don't know if we're going to make it all the way through this bomber because it's barley wine, but it's 11%. Let's go ahead and open it.
So while you guys are doing that, is that listed on the website? I know all these beers that we've had so far, if you know, you type them into the website and they give you this, these beautiful pictures and all the information you need to talk about the beers right there when you put it up on the website, the alcohol, the IBUs, the style, and then the backstory behind it. Have you tried doing that?
I did look it up. They do have a 2015 vintage on their website currently. However, I found a blog that has the exact write-up that the brewery issued on it, so I will read that momentarily. First, I'm just going to give you my own interpretation, and Pete's going to try this too. We both just poured it. So I just poured this. As predictably, after 6 years, there's very little head, but there is a little thin, paper-thin layer of, you know, white head that dissipates pretty quickly. There's very little left. Oh, well, Pete's has a lot. He had the first pour. He's got a nice half a finger head. Mine's, I guess I poured mine less
than. Yeah, I don't backwash into my drink, so. Just kidding.
Well, no, I. Anyway, but it's that deep murky brown, like a maybe between brown and copper. Light gets through, but it's pretty murky. So, and it smells. It smells, after 6 years, I'm surprised, but we've got a real pungent hop aroma on it. But you can tell that there's more going on there, some malt and some fruit. So let's just take a sip. Oh, yeah. Man, it's a punch in the mouth.
It's a punch in my nose. I'm still sniffing it, too, and it's punching my nose through the roof.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of hops in here after 6 years. I'm surprised. It's just loaded with hop bitterness, you know, lots of everything. There's a lot of malt that counteracts that, but the hops are, it's a little bit of everything. Well, maybe a lot of bit of everything. A lot of malt, a lot of hops, a lot of booze. It's just loaded with, it's a, you know, a beer on steroids. It's a sipper. This is a good campfire beer. I mean, you could sip this glass, this snifter I have here, could probably last me, you know, 20, 30 minutes, no problem.
Oh, man, I don't think I could get through this bottle by myself.
Yeah, and this is a 22-ounce bottle, and keep in mind, I have three more of these in my cellar. I don't know how I'm ever... This is going to have to require some help from some other beer nuts. I'd have to mail one to Lieutenant Dang out there. But, I'm going to read what I found on a blog that will describe this beer better than I can, because it just, to me, it's just kind of, I don't want to say a punch in the face because it sounds like it mows you over, but it's, I wasn't sure what to expect because honestly, there's a little bit of sediment in the bottom of the bottle, but probably because there's so much hops in this, I imagine some hop sediment dropped to the bottom, but, you know, I was careful when I poured it not to, you know, disrupt it too much and get that, those floaties in, and it's the, you know, the pour I have is nice and, like, again, that murky dark brown, you know, orangey brown flavor.
It's very aromatic. I mean, I'm just enjoying smelling it.
So I'm going to read this. It says, "Allow us to present you with the Stone Old Guardian Barley Wine in all its unadulterated glory. We make small adjustments to the recipe every year, just a little bit, as it provides an opportunity to try some different hops or malts. For the 2012 release, we made a deliberate effort to move away from the English hop influence of the past few years, taking out East Kent Golding hops, subbing in a blend of an American Chinook, Calypso, and Cascade. Yes, that's right, Cascade. This is the first use of Cascade in one of our beers, and we really enjoyed the hints of grapefruit and pine it contributed to the aroma and flavor. We also bumped up the Maris Otter Crystal Malt by a mere 0.5%, and it's amazing how much of a difference it made in the color and the upfront body. All in all, it's resulted in a well-rounded beer that is ready to drink now or can be aged at cellar temperatures for many years if you can wait that long. And we have waited that long, and it's worth the reward that we're getting. It's really hard to describe how flavorful this is, and it's an American barley wine.
I'll give you a couple of things, if you don't mind, JR. I mean, I get on the aroma. I get the alcohol in my nose because it brightens everything up, and kind of a sugary smell, a sweetness in the aroma, and it almost smells like if I took a handful of cracked grain, and you know, just prior to putting it in the mash and stick it up to your nose and take a big whiff, kind of like a cereal, like a sweet cereal, like a Frosted Flakes. You know, that's kind of weird. I've never described one like that before, but. And then my flavor, it's a pure caramel bomb to me. I mean, I just get pure sweet caramel and followed by a nice smooth hoppiness, which isn't overbearing or overly hoppy. Maybe when it was fresh in 2012, it might have been a real hop bomb. But I think with some age on it here, it's kind of mellowed out. And I get a nice caramel, just a real liquid caramel.
Yeah, you know what? It's an American barley wine, and American barley wines are usually more bitter and more hoppy. But I think with the age, it's almost more changed and morphed into more of almost like an English barley wine style ale with that caramel and I'm not really tasting dark fruits like I do in some of the English. So maybe it is more hop oriented, but a big cereal. Sweetness, caramel, that's more indicative of an English. So maybe this is kind of right in the middle of English and American barley wine. But either way, I'm glad we're drinking it. I don't know how we're going to tackle 22 ounces of this between the two.
I imagine
you'll be leaving most of it behind for me. But
I'm sure you'll get it done.
I'm going to help you. Don't worry, gentlemen. I'm still good to go. I still got a lot of headspace to go.
And, all you right. Know, well, you've heard good. These. You've heard the sort of cliche saying: "There's no such thing as leftover wine," but what's leftover wine? When people talk about things like bottle savers, well, it's sort of the same for beer. You know, what's leftover beer? I mean, unless you absolutely forgot about something, and then the next day you go, "Oh man," and you'd cap it, put it in the fridge, and drink it. If it's big enough beer.
Yeah.
Well, before we move to another big beer that Doug's going to review to close out the show, I just want to say to Lieutenant Dang, I'm sending one of these your way because I got two more 2012s and a 13. And I have a few other things that I've been saving for you. So Christmas is coming. We're going to do a Secret Santa type thing. I'm just going to commit to go ahead and sending you a few goodies. So.
All right. I'll take it.
So I'm looking forward to your review of this once you get it. All right, Dugout, I think we're ready to move on to the grand finale here. Oh, tell us about your selection.
Yeah, the big boy. It's called Mikhail, Mikhail. And a little bit of what's going on right now, one would have, it's a Russian Imperial Stout. So a little bit of what's going on right now with the passing of our former president. Got to think of that Russian leader Mikhail Gorbachev, but it's not named after him. So I'll go on with the description of it, but just a memorial to Mr. Bush, President Bush, and a famous quote: "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall."
Amen.
So I'll just continue on with the beer, though. Mikhail is a 2016 Espresso Imperial Russian Stout, aged in bourbon barrels. It's clocking in at 13.5% with 43 IBUs. And I'm just going off the website here. Stone Imperial Russian Stout is a thick, rich, sinful beer that's heavy on the palate and massively aromatic with notes of anise, black currants, coffee, and roastiness. Some cellar notes, intense coffee characteristics abound for both the dark malts and the espresso, while rich caramel-like vanilla notes from the bourbon barrel aging adds layers of complexity. A touch of sweetness and a vibrant dark fruit finish. This is an usual take on our traditional Imperial Russian stout. Mikhail pays homage to Mikhail Bulgakov, whose novel The Master and the Margarita is considered the foremost of Soviet satires. I do believe this is aged 14 months in Kentucky bourbon barrels. It's also listed as 2017 series, although no, I have 2018 series batch 02, so it's a little different from what the website is listing. So yeah, it's going to be a little different here. Pours a heavy dark black with a sort of a cocoa colored head, just very even lacing around the sides of the glass. I mean, the nose definitely, you get some bourbon, some chocolate, and sort of chocolate covered raisins, some real dark fruit going on there. And I do have to mention this because I saw this somewhere else too, is that, all right, so it's a 500 milliliter bottle, which, what, a true European pint. And it's sort of a movement away from those 22 ounces, those big barrels, or those big bottles. So this one comes in $14.99 for, you know, this beer in a 22 ounce format would have been a lot more money. And I'm liking that it's the lesser size and a little bit less money on the pocketbook too. But it's champagne corked with a punt style champagne bottle and wire attachment on the top. So I get the wire attachment off the top, try to turn that big cork, nothing. Put my sweatshirt around it, turn it, nothing. Run downstairs, get the old like vintage nutcracker around the edge of it, start to twist it, it's twisting, cork breaks off. Run back downstairs, get the waiter style wine opener, bang, out it came. I was persistent. So yeah, a little trouble getting that cork out of the bottle. I've seen that listed somewhere else too. So if you got one of these, be prepared with option 1, 2, and 3 for opening the beer. Back to the beer itself. Again, huge notes of just nice bourbon, not like in your face bourbon or burn your nose bourbon. So first sip, I get a lot of really dark coffee, a tinge of bourbon, just some really super roasted malts, toffee. I mean, just probably about the bitterest chocolate you can think of, but not in a bitter sense in the way the beer is, just the flavor. It's got a really nice medium mouthfeel to it, not sludgy, not thick and syrupy, but you know, just really drinks phenomenal. I mean, there's some alcohol presence to it, obviously. There's it's at 13.5, but I find that adds into the character. It's a complete package, you know, so the other elements add to the burn of the alcohol, and just wow, what a beer. I mean, I think, you know, if I had anything, yeah, nothing negative to say about it at all. I mean, just other than that, you know, the mouthfeel is thinner than I would have expected. The bourbon barrel is lesser than I expected, but those aren't bad things. I enjoy this beer immensely, and I'm hoping to buy another one and definitely stick that in the cellar. But it's, you know, a lot of times with a coffee beer, even though it's bourbon barrel aged, you still have that predominant coffee flavor. And this is listed as espresso, but it's not overpowering coffee, not overpowering bourbon. It's just this meld of a beautiful, perfect beer. I mean, this thing's phenomenal.
Sounds delicious.
And you know, one of the great things about every beer we've had tonight was These beers were readily available. They're not whales. A beer like what I'm having right now, obviously, JR, with what you've aged, is definitely be considered a vintage in you know, in certain areas of the country. And you were in a high-end hotel, you could get a list, and that beer might be on there for $250, just because they've aged that well and they drink that well. But I wouldn't. I would.
Doug's saying, definitely finish that thing. That's what he's saying.
Oh, we are. Yeah, we are. I just poured. I just topped off.
But no, I mean, I was just saying, when I was in San Diego at the hotel we were staying at, on a work trip, they handed us a vintage beer list. And I'll be damned, man, if some of the beers I didn't have, that I had in my cellar, weren't listed on that beer list for $250 plus. So there's something to be said about it. And especially if your beer ends up like in a vintage like that. And, you know, apparently these guys have had the forethought to hang on to enough of their product and age a lot of their product in temperature controlled settings so that they have these available. And that they, that, you know, so if you're at a hotel in San Diego and you ask for a vintage beer list, you're going to see one of their products on there from 2012, 2013, 2010. It's quite a cool business model if you think about it, like border on hoarding in a way. But you know,
gotta do what you
gotta
do.
We're collectors, you're not hoarders.
Connoisseurs, connoisseurs.
Collecting connoisseurs.
That's right.
Well, I was, man, guys, if you see this, I swear to God, if you see this, get it. I mean, it's right in a nice price range. It'll age well, but man, it's drinking phenomenal.
Did you
right
put
now.
Did you put a picture up on the site?
I will.
Yeah,
I cool. haven't yet. No, I'm talking to my phone, which is also my camera, and try to multitask, and I'm going to mess something up. So,
oh, <you won't. laughs> our local shop Discount Drinks in Wyandotte, Michigan. They had a couple of each of these. I think there were three. There was the charred that we mentioned, and then the one you had, Mikhail, and then there was a third one. I had, name escapes me, but that was just bourbon barrel stout. All three of those, I think, are still on the shelf, but there's only a few left of each. So I'm going to be hitting that store tomorrow to grab at least one or two of these. And yeah, these beers that age, you know, it's I know that I remember loving Old Guardian, and I guess probably gone to the store two or three times and seen it on the shelf and figured, oh, I'll grab one of those and cellar it. And now I got three 2012s and a 2013. It's one of those beers that I remembered really enjoying and saying, if I see that again, I'm grabbing it. So, you know, hey, it's okay. When you're cellaring a barley wine, you have, I mean, you can cellar a barley wine for 20 years probably and still it'll be enjoyable. So, I know. Getting pretty happy here, just killing this big boy here, and I just poured the last of the bottle into mine. So we're not going to waste any of this. That's for damn sure. It's a treat.
Love it, love it, love it, love it. It's feeling
so
good.
So another reason I love Stone, and this is purely selfish as a home brewer, is you know, if you're a home brewer and you go to buy bottles, if you bought brand new bottles to bottle your home brew in, it costs more than a cheap beer of the same number of bottles. So for you to buy that 24 pack of bottles, you can buy a 24 pack of cheap beers, right?
Right, right. Yep.
So, which is a racket in my opinion. So most, and all home brewers know this, like, go buy it, you'll just go broke. So the idea is to like recycle your beer bottles and get those labels off, get the glue absolutely. off, and that could be quite a hellish process without using, like, I don't know, acetate or WD-40 to break the glue down that's on these bottles.
But OxyClean, yeah, all that.
Yeah, just a million different remedies.
And a scraper and your fingernails and everything else.
Yeah, there's always something left on there, no matter what somebody says. Always some little bit of glue or something left on there. But anyway, Stone, puts out these bottles, and they have these plastic labels on them. And it's basically, you put them in boiling water, and it's enough to melt the glue in the bottles, or the labels just float right off.
Well, there.
Glue it all.
Thanks for the tip.
But here's the plus side. Now, like a few weeks ago, I had a few batches of beer. I needed a bottle, and I was shy in bottles. But I knew the Stone thing. I went to the store, and they had a Stone mixed IPA 12-pack. And had all these different IPAs that were just killer. So no problem drinking those. And in that case, we're in Michigan. We have that 10-cent bottle return, 10 cents a bottle. So that's a lot cheaper than anything. And I just, again, I put them in the super hot water. Labels fly off, ready to go.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dugout, being a home brewer. And right now I'm sitting on probably a good 20 cases of empties that all are delabeled. And it was through trial and error. It was through trial and error where I learned which ones float right off, like you said, and which ones don't. And now that I know which ones do, of course, I try to buy those on a regular basis, but not that I have to anymore. And of course, if you ever run out of bottles, Dugout, just give me a call.
Now that I know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
me. And I got bombers, I got flip tops, I got 12 ouncers, I got all kinds of different bottles. So, but I need to fill them, and I, in fact, just started filling them, and I'll talk about that at the end. But
right.
No, that beer sounds fantastic. And on the Russian name theme, hopefully we'll get to it one of these days, but my neighbor went to Norway on a cruise, and then when they came back, since I picked them up from the airport and watched their house and whatnot, they gifted me a bomber of Brezhnev, which is an imperial stout from Norway, from I think it was Finn Brewing or Sin Brewing. I can't remember the name. Oh, Kinn, K-I-N-N. So looking forward to trying the Brezhnev. And that was named for Leonid Brezhnev. Well, thanks for sharing that. That was cool. That was good stuff.
All right, so Stone, if you don't know, now you know.
And you'll be a stoner if you join the club.
Aha, hey, that deserves... There you go.
I know, I'm good for one of those every episode, sorry.
Give that man his rim shot. All right, so is that it?
Well, just one more mention. I wanted to let anybody from Stone... my favorite fantasy football team nickname is Arrogant Bastards. I'm in a league of Las Vegas people, mostly industry, beer industry, and spirits industry people. My team is the Arrogant Bastards, and we led the league in points scored.
Nice.
And then I'm in the Detroit-Chicago league, where I also led the league in points scored, and with a record of 21-3, finished first in the league. I'm sorry, 23-3, because we play doubleheaders every week. So both of my Arrogant Bastards teams led their league in scoring, so it's good karma with the Arrogant Bastard name, and my logo is the gargoyle. So looking forward to hopefully winning some championships. And Christopher, just want to say, yeah, my team name is the Imperial Stoutmen in the Sporgy League.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about that league.
Well,
you guys hear JR?
Did I cut out?
Yes.
Well, let me fill in here for JR if I can. If you're going to mention the beer Arrogant Bastard, that was my entry to Stone. And I loved the top of their box. It used to be on the top. Now it's on the back of the label. I'll go ahead and read this real quick. Arrogant Bastard Ale. And it breaks down how to say it out phonetically. And it says, the act or quality of being arrogant, haughty, undue assumption, overbearing conceit. There's two paragraphs. I'll try to get through them quickly. This is an aggressive beer. You probably won't like it. It is quite doubtful that you have the taste or sophistication to be able to appreciate an ale of this quality and depth. We would suggest that you stick to safer and more familiar territory. Maybe something with a multi-million dollar ad campaign aimed at convincing you it's made in a little brewery, or one that implies that their tasteless, fizzy yellow beer will give you more sex appeal. Perhaps you think multi-million dollar ad campaigns make a beer taste better. perhaps your mouthing words as you read this. At Arrogant Bastard Brewing, we believe that pandering to the lowest common denominator represents the height of tyranny, a virtual form of keeping the consumer barefoot and stupid, brought forth upon an unsuspecting public in 1997. Arrogant Bastard Ale openly challenged the tyrannical overlords who were brazenly attempting to keep Americans chained in the shackles of poor taste. Since the very beginning, Arrogant Bastard Ale has revealed in its unprecedented and uncompromising celebration of intensity. There have been many nods to Arrogant Bastard Ale, even outright attempts to copy it, but only one can ever embody the true nature of liquid arrogance. Bam.
And on that note, Christopher, I'm in the Sporgy Podcast League, another one of Chris's podcasts, yeah. And I demand to be invited after I win the league.
Yeah.
Confidence. He's exuding confidence.
He should with his record.
Yeah.
I don't talk about that league.
I'm 10-3.
That's such a good label. That's one of my favorite. I'm sorry, JR, to diverge from your fantasy football, but that's one of my favorite beer labels ever. Like craft beer, we want to be a wide tent. We want to craft to get everybody to not drink yellow fizzy beer. But on some hand, like, I want to say, you know what? Maybe this isn't for you. Maybe you don't have the taste buds for it. Like, there's a little
and you
bit
know what?
It, you know?
Shaming you into drinking it.
What an awesome diversion, because you know what, Dan, you just brought us right back to the beer again. And that's what this is about, is it's more than just a brand or a label. It's about a movement that, you know, this is what we are, and this is who we are, and this is what we're going to do, and climb on board or just go do something else, you know?
Yeah.
If it's not for you, it's not for you. Fine, we're good with that. You should be too. But man, I'm great with it. These beers, the only one I hadn't had is the one that JR and Uncle Pete, that Guardian, I have not had that in that year. I've had it before. And then the beer I had tonight, everything else I've tried before. And it's
that's a great thing about craft beer today is there is a brand, there is a company out there that fits your vibe and what you're into. I mean, either they're in your corner, they're in your neck of the woods, your region, or they're somewhere else, but you can find them. They're out there. You know, whether it's Arrogant Bastard and Stone that's kind of a little in your face at times, or somebody else that's just, like, fun and easygoing. Like, craft beer has got everything now. There's thousands and thousands of breweries out there, so try them all. Like, it's a fun time. It's a fun time we live in for beer.
Well, I love the gargoyle picture on all of the pretty much on all of the beer cans and bottles from Stone has that beautiful gargoyle image on there. And on their website it says, for centuries gargoyles have been known to ward off evil spirits, and since our beginning in 1996 our gargoyle has helped us ward off cheap ingredients, pasteurization, and chemical additives. Nice. The modern day evil spirits of beer. So, you know, they're holding true to their beginnings and making great beer. So really glad we covered Stone today.
Chemical additives, don't get me started.
All right. Well, great episode.
Hey, if you guys don't mind, can I add a little tidbit at the end?
Well, sure. Give us
it
now, Uncle Pete.
Sorry to belabor the bring on the
Let us know.
Barley wine, I got all night.
Yeah, we're
inquiring,
working through a beer here.
Minds want to know. Spit it out.
Two things. Now that you gave me the license, I'm going to go for two. First, I brewed a porter 2 weeks ago, and I did three variants. I got a toasted coconut, a Dark Horse barrel-aged coffee bean variant, and a regular vanilla bean variant. So another 10 days or so in the bottle conditioning, and it's going to be party time. I can't wait to taste them. Everything came out perfect from the original gravity to the final gravity. It's a beautiful-looking beer, and it tasted great at bottling. And I'm so hopeful that it carbonates perfectly in the bottle. So that's one. And I'm going to be dreaming up some names of these. That's one of my favorite pastimes is dreaming up names. Doug, I know you're really good at that. You've got some great names for your homebrew. And two, I'm already planning my next homebrew. And just as an homage to Sierra Nevada, which we covered a couple episodes ago, I did get a hold of the recipe for a 5-gallon batch of the Resilience. Nice. Which, you know, I think it's great. You know, there's over 1,000 breweries across the country.
Oh, that awesome. Are, you know, would share that one with me, please.
Sure will. Sure will.
Yeah, please. I'll brew it.
Yeah, sure. And so it should be appearing very soon, on you know, locally throughout the country. There's over 1,000 breweries across the country that are making it. I think a lot of them did it on, what was that called, Giving Tuesday or something?
Yeah.
A couple days ago or last week. And I just can't wait to taste it, you know, from our local brewers. I know in Michigan, there had to be at least a dozen or more that are up for brewing it. But anyway, that's on the home brewing front, and I'm so excited because I think I finally settled in at my house. It's been a year since I retired and got into this house, and I got my brewing equipment up and running, and you know, I'm just excited to get on a routine now of brewing more. So for some reason, it seems like I do more in the dead of winter when it's frigid cold out in the garage, but who cares? That's my 2 cents, okay? 2 bits from Uncle Pete. Thank you very much, Ingrid.
That's all awesome stuff.
Get no change.
And yeah.
Here.
We're keeping that 2 cents.
I'd be actually willing to take that to another level with that recipe and maybe present it to my homebrew club to have some guys help out in brewing some batches of it and somehow use it as a fundraiser to make some money to send to these guys. I mean, just an idea that I came up with while you were just talking about it. But, man, I want to brew the beer too. And if there's a way I can get money and give it to them, or I just brew the money, or I brew the beer and I give them money to the fund, you know, it's definitely a worthwhile cause.
Yeah. And by the way, just wanted to raise our glasses one last time to number 41, George H.W. Bush. It was a very moving service today, and there's not many like that guy anymore. So cheers, George H.W.
Cheers, 41.
Cheers.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers.
He was the youngest fighter pilot. Was it Vietnam? Yeah, he was.
World War II.
World War II? Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it was crazy. I learned that about him. Yeah.
Well, I'm sitting here with Pete at my home in Gros Isle, Michigan, and not many people know he was stationed at the Gros Isle Naval Air Center, Naval Air Station,
wow.
Which is no longer a naval base, but it's the southern tip of the island. It's now a private airport. So he actually served here on the island and lived in Trenton, Michigan, just across the river, across the channel from us. So a little bit of history associated with our
that's local awesome.
Community here. So
that's yeah. awesome.
Certainly proud.
And, proud to and have you know, history. Gros Isle was a little too nice to house those guys. They'd have put them over in Trenton, right?
On that note, though, I got to add, here's another penny worth. I used to work on the Bablo boats here on the Detroit River back in the 70s and 80s for about four years. And the 1980 Republican Convention was at the Joe Louis Arena. And I was on the dock in Detroit, kind of whiling my time away between sailings, and opened the back doors of Joe Louis open up, and who comes out? I see George Bush walking down the steps, and that was my close encounter from about 100 feet away. And that was my only special encounter with somebody of that stature. I don't think I've ever been that close to a president other than him.
He was the youngest fighter pilot of World War II. He was shot down the Pacific, then was picked up by a submarine headed into raid on Japan. After the war, he founded a successful oil company. Then he went on to be elected into Congress before becoming the U.S. ambassador to the UN. He then served as chairman for the Republican Committee. His next assignment was director of the CIA. For there, he became the first envoy to China, where we established a relationship with that country. He was Ronald Reagan's vice president, and then, of course, became president after that, and had some successful stuff during his time. He was during the collapse of the Soviet Union, when we all were, you know, still afraid of the Cold War and all that jazz. And later, prosecuted Saddam Hussein and freed Kuwait during the Gulf War. So,
I'll give you a beer tie-in, and I'm pretty sure this is a beer tie-in, but JR would appreciate it since him and I talk about our fraternity days a lot. But back at Yale, I think he was president of the Delta Kappa Epsilon, or the Deeks, we called them when they had a chapter up here in Michigan. And I'm sure he was a beer nut in his time.
Yeah.
Amen. Know. A beer nut that once served on the island that I'm residing on right now. So great tie-ins to a great American and a great president, and rest in peace, President Bush.
His son gave a good eulogy, if anybody wants to look that up on YouTube or wherever.
It was awesome.
All right, gentlemen, I think it's about time to head across the wall to Mexico. So
yes, remember on Twitter.
As they say in old Mexico City.
If you like this show, please tell a friend. Please follow us on Twitter and like and share us on Facebook by searching for Christopher Media. You can subscribe to all ChristopherMedia.net shows for free on ChristopherMedia.net. Please make sure to rate and comment on all your favorite Christopher Media shows. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net.